Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. A beautiful, beautiful day in upstate New York. Starting to put a string of them together. And actually, we're starting to put a string together of really good race days. And yesterday might be... I'm going to speculate, might be the last day. I can't speak to next Monday and Tuesday yet, but it's getting close that we won't have too many more days where there's just two venues to peruse and bet. But you look at today and Charlestown Gulfstream and Churchill. And boy, oh boy, there's some really good racing. The pick five starts tonight at Charlestown. And wanted to remind everybody, 8:28 Eastern, 12% takeout. Support Eric Zimney and the team at Charlestown. A sequence 7x10x9x9x10. And there's actually a third level claiming allowance that starts it off, then a first level allowance, 10 horse field, good group actually, and then another allowance as the sixth, going 6.5, then a 4.5 third level allowance, and it closes out with a nickel non-2. Fillies and mares going 7. So seems like a nice sequence at Charlestown. I looked at Churchill and the pick five. There is a feature. In fact, there's a feature at both the afternoon venues, both Gulfstream and Churchill, that are really, you know, stakes quality. The third level turf allowance at Churchill, there's a group of 10 horses, and 8 of them are stake winners and several graded stake winners. Yes. 8-5 favorite, front run the Fed, who, you know, absolutely is formidable in there. Doesn't necessarily have to win. You got Mr. Dumas for Maker. You got Casa Creed, Lee Einsiedler, and Bill Mott. You've got an interesting horse, Phil Sims, down inside. Royal Mesa, who spent the winter on the synthetic. Interesting. Going to be a price. Ritzy AP. Jack Sisterson taking over. Ritzy AP. 6-1. So very, very good group. And it's a fun sequence. The pick five starts in the sixth. Might be able to lean on Frost or Frippery in there. There's more than a couple of juicy prices. Seventh and eighth. I think I found a couple of interesting horses. And in the nightcap, it's a 50 claimer that's got a little bit of everything. It's kind of a hodgepodge. You got some horses that got a horse from Bob Hess that has been away over a year, but is a maiden, but contended the Cal Oaks. So it's kind of a funny, the nightcap is tricky. Ticket building, and I've got the selections done, but I waited on the ticket building. I'll do the ticket building at noon after I get off the air and after we've seen scratches. Maybe that might help a little bit. And Gus looked at it too. So you can compare and contrast and There's many players over the years that have taken, if Gus and I are not in complete harmony, they'll take my top pick and Gus's top pick, and they'll build, you know, with their pick, and they'll build a ticket, and have met with nice success. As, by the way, speaking of some success, again, yesterday, the, after that nice little pop at Will Rogers on Tuesday, I'm so glad that Seth, you know, we had just enough time for Seth yesterday, and when he mentioned Silvery enough in that ninth or the eighth at Tampa yesterday, I wanted to really kind of drive the point home. I thought Silvery enough was way the horse to beat, and somehow I, from 7-2, ended up at almost 7-1. Paid $15.40. So I know a couple people, heard from a couple of people that that did okay. King was Silverly enough. Speaking of Bob Hess Jr. Bob Hess Jr. Up pops the devil, as it were. So a lot of good things to get into. We do have to deal with a thorny issue in Maryland after the first break. Tim Keefe is going to join us. The situation starting to get strained at this point, because, you know, with so many other venues, virtually, who's left really that hasn't come to the table and hasn't green lighted their racetrack properties to be able to run, but they're still waiting on Annapolis, and it's beginning to be kind of quizzical. Pennsylvania, obviously, is in a similar holding pattern, but you can kind of tell by some comments that Tim Keefe made that got into the coverage arena, and we're going to talk to Tim. And Tim's, concerned, obviously, about getting going in Maryland, but is also bothered by the potential of MJC not adjusting the stakes purse structure to benefit and to gird the overnight purses. Essentially what NYRA did, what you heard, if you heard Martin Panza again on the replay, or you hadn't heard him yesterday live, you know, Martin explaining, you know, the tabling of any number of stakes from the spring schedule at Belmont, what it is able to do is reinforce the overnight purses, you know, for the everyday racing, for the, you know, the maidens, the allowances, the claimers, etc. And, you know, the trimming of purses. I mean, the graded stake races have their own value because of the, you know, the residual black type for the participants. And, you know, taking some money out of stakes, I mean, you know, Belmont from $1.5 million to $1 million, $500,000, spread that out over the meet, that's a nice benefit. I mean, that goes a long way. So Tim is going to talk about discussions with management about, you know, the purses and the payments into, you know, the Preakness meet, as it were, and how many of those stakes are, you know, they're going to run the whole Preakness week stakes slate, for instance. I mean, for October, it's a little hard to know and make decisions. It was a little different, obviously, the situation for New York. So you didn't have the lead up. Like, for instance, I brought up the Brooklyn with Martin because there's no, you know, the elders, there's no elders that are, you know, banging down the door right now after being idle for 2 months. There's no handicap division horses that are screaming to go a mile and a half in the Brooklyn. Much like there aren't, there weren't 3-year-olds clamoring to go a mile and a half next week or, you know, 2 weeks from now without some lead up. So we'll talk to Tim. We'll talk to Eric Hallstrom, who, of course, is now at Indiana Downs and Indiana Grand, I should say. And Eric, with a long, distinguished career in track management, excited to hear, you know, even under these circumstances, how he's finding things at Indiana. And they're set. I mean, and you can tell they're, I think you can tell from some of their press releases and so forth, they're excited. They're just happy that they got a date to kick off and Indiana Derby and Oaks and so forth. You know, they're going to start June 15th and run to November 18th. And we'll likely, you know, do some handicapping again this summer and into the fall with Bill Downs and get Rachel and Eric. We'll find out what kind of handicapper Eric is. We'll talk, of course, to Haskin and Dick Powell and Rich Ang. Got to get Rich on today. We've missed Rich. Somehow things have spun out of control the last few weeks, and we will get Rich in here. I want him to catch up, and of course, Rich probably thrilled to be back handicapping Santa Anita and getting back into a nice steady flow. Speaking of Santa Anita, they drew, as did Churchill. You got a huge, huge stake card at Churchill on Saturday, and that, of course, will be televised on Fox Sports 1, America's Day at the Races. But let's start at Santa Anita, where the graded opportunities, the Whittingham and the Daytona, as they go into holiday mode for Monday, Memorial Day, the 25th. But the Daytona and the Whittingham both drawing fields of 7. A couple of notes out of here. The Daytona, which of course is being run at 5.5 on the main turf course, as opposed to coming down the hill like it used to. But Doug O'Neill with a trio in here. Wild Man Jack, oh, good to see him back. And Murad Khan, Stubbins. Bondi's got Sparkyville. Ron Ellis, who very steadily is rebuilt his operation. Blame it on the law in there for him. Sistron for Costa and Sadler. Texas Wedge for Peter Miller. Then the Whittingham, the grade 2, mile and a quarter. The course starts on the hill. How about United for the Roths and Dick Mandela? Originaire shows up in here. How about Chad sending Rock Emperor? Rock Emperor at the Whittingham. Synthesis and Bold Endeavor, George Papa Padromo. Multiplier for Peter Miller and Desert Stone for Balthus. So, graded stakes. Nice to be able to open PPs and see graded stakes again. Of course, last week we had the Desert Stormer. Oh, we never reached. We never got a hold of Simon Callahan. All right, we'll put that on the back burner. Then over to Churchill, they've got a big, long, another card of nothing but overflow fields and the Matt Wynn. $150,000 grade 3 Matt Wynn and 50 Derby points on the line. We'll talk to Jay Pribman tomorrow. We'll get all of Jay's Belmont thoughts and much more. But The Matt Wynn, field of 12. Major Fed drew the outside post, drew the 12. So Rosario's got to figure out a trip. Maxfield back in the gate Saturday. This goes off at 5:44. How about... there's a bunch of interesting horses in here, actually. Flapjack is back. Jack Sisterson. We'll keep waiting. I know. We'll cash Flapjack at some point. That NY Traffic, Safi Joseph. Paco Lopez back riding, by the way, including today at Churchill. Necker Island for Stan Huff. Cryptocash, McPeak. Shake Some Action, Brad Cox for Rupp Racing. Attachment Raid is in here for Dale. Dale's been shopping a spot for him. Ray Handel, Celtic or Celtic Striker. Informative for Uriah St. Louis. Pneumatic for Asmussen and Stidham with Mystic Guide. Let's take an early break and get Tim Keefe in here and get going.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
To At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 into hour one, and Tim Keefe is going to join us from the Maryland THA. I would much rather be, you know, talking to Tim about, you know, an upcoming starter. And I'm sure Tim would rather be talking about upcoming starters. But right now we got to figure out when those starters are going to actually be able to run. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
No, not at all. You know, it's I've been, you know, kind of checking with you know, with the racing office at Laurel to see, you know, how close it was. It seemed like you know, things were edging forward, and the health officials in Anne Arundel County, and you know, it seemed imminent, and yet you know, the plane keeps circling Thurgood Marshall Airport.
You know, we've been closed, obviously, since the middle of March, so it's been tough for everybody. It's been tough for everybody, not just here, obviously, but all around the country, and certainly pandemic all around the world. So, you know, I think we have to all be cognizant of that fact. But focusing here on Maryland, our governor has done, he's been very methodical in his approach to how he's handled this pandemic. He's relied heavily on medical advice from his health advisors. He came out a couple of weeks ago with a phased, three-phase stage of opening the state. We were very hopeful. We were optimistic and hopeful we would be part of phase one. And when that didn't happen, yeah, that was kind of tough. That was difficult for us. You know, we've got a great relationship with the Maryland Jockey Club and with the Stronach Group, our advisors, our lobbyists, our lawyers. You know, we've been in touch with the governor's office. We've got a lot of protocols in place. We're ready to go when they give us a green light. I think we've done a good job, all of us collectively, relaying to the governor's office and those that will eventually make the decision when to open, how we handle the COVID-19, how we handle the racing without crowds, how we handle keeping everybody safe at Laurel. And, you know, ultimately the decision's up to the governor. We have had meetings with Anne Arundel County, but the bottom line is we have to wait for the green light with the governor. And we were hopeful, I guess, also we would be running maybe this weekend with Memorial Day coming up. It's been, I guess, a little more frustrating to see some of the states around us, like Charlestown, opening. New York's getting at least has got a date, so they have a target on when they're open. So it's, you know, it is frustrating for us not even having a target, and just, you know, we just have some ideas on when we think and we might be open. We're hopeful next week the governor will come out with either a second stage of openings or an announcement of certain businesses that he's going to allow to reopen next Friday. And we're hopeful we're going to be part of that announcement, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Has, you know, the other venues that have been running and the protocols that have been successfully implemented, and obviously those are being, you know, displayed and are being presented as part of the discussions. It's not as if there's anything. It's not as if, as people are concerned in Pennsylvania, that there's some animosity where obviously there is in Pennsylvania. But, you know, certainly the governor, you know, in fact, by allowing the redevelopment plan to become law, you know, 2 weeks ago, if he was anti-racing. So it's not the issue. This is strictly nuts and bolts, you know, the business of business being, you know, rebooted, you know, throughout the state, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to remember, Governor Hogan's the head of the Governors Association, so he's going to take a little bit more conservative approach, perhaps, than a lot of the other governors have. The governor, as I said, he's very regimented in how he's going to do it. He's explained how he's going to do it, and he's sticking to the advice of his health advisors, and that's just the reality. He's a great supporter of the racing industry, as you just mentioned. You know, we've passed the redevelopment act of redeveloping Laurel and both Laurel and Pimlico. He was just on the air last weekend, Saturday, with Linda Stronach, announcing the new Preakness date, October 3rd. So, no, he's definitely a partner of ours. It has nothing to do, not opening the racing has nothing to do with his feeling towards negatively towards our industry. Not at all.
Well, beyond then just getting that green light, there's concern just you know, it happens that Martin Panza was with us yesterday, Tim, and he laid out the structural amendment that was necessary to basically reinforce the overnight purses. And you had a piece with Bill Finley in TDN yesterday, and you know, you expressed and are basically speaking for the horsemen, obviously, concerns over how money for the, you know, the upcoming meet, and basically Laurel is, you know, nearly year-round racing. Talk a little bit about those concerns, and obviously this is going to involve discussions, you know, with the Stronach group about potentially trimming, you know, some of the stakes maybe, and maybe trimming the Preakness purse, because there's no certainty as to when the revenues are going to, you know, begin to, you know, come back to fill up the purse account, although you do have a decent buffer right now in that purse account.
No question. So right now we have a little over $3 million, $3.2 million buffer. That'll sustain us for the next roughly 15 racing days at equal levels as were before when we were racing back when we closed on the 15th. We're going to keep the purses the same. We're going to keep the owner, Maryland Bred owner bonuses the same. We're going to keep paying back the fifth to the last at 4% rate, meaning it's important to get money back into the owners and the trainers' hands. You know, having said that, obviously our purse revenues are derived largely by the slot revenues from the casinos. They're closed. We're not realizing any revenue. Certainly there's a lot of unknown. We don't know when the casinos will open, when they do open, you know, how will they open, certainly at lower capacity. You know, so, you know, then you got to look at the handle, too. You know, our handle, our handle should be greater. You know, if you kind of look at what some of these other racetracks are handling throughout the country, they've been, you know, setting some handle records in some of the venues. But there's so many unknowns, and trying to plan between now and October, it's very difficult. But as I said before, we have a very good relationship with the Maryland Jockey Club and the Stronach Group. Craig Frables, he's been great since he came in from taking over, I guess, basically from Tim Ridvoe. We've been have very good discussions with him. It's never too early to start the discussions now, because I believe, and a lot of us believe, that we need to focus on our Maryland guys, our local Maryland horsemen and women that have been here struggling, and the owners. And you know, yeah, Pimlico is a great event. It shines a spotlight on us. It does a lot for us in Maryland. But these guys are the nuts and bolts of our year-round racing. And you know, until we can see what the revenues are going to be and how we're going to be able to handle the Preakness, it's just too early to tell. You know, certainly it's not going to be like every other Preakness. It's going to be different. Whether that means it's going to be lower, you know, purses or fewer stakes, you know, that's not a determination for me to make right now. But it certainly needs to be part of a discussion to be thought about.
Do you have a? It does. I mean, and you know, obviously with what. Using what NYRA has done already to, you know, with the same kind of mentality and the same approach, this is nothing new. I mean, we've already seen it. You know, Eric Zimney was with us last week. Charlestown, you know, the same thing. They trimmed some of the open company stakes and the classic so that they could basically guarantee, you know, the rank and file horsemen. You know, something close to the normal purse levels. You know, it's very important. I mean, everybody's concerned about right now, but you know, there's a sustainability element to this, and you know, horsemen and owners, they've been paying bills, and they got to get something back. If they at least have a chance to get something back, and that, you know, that's the motivation, undoubtedly. Do you have a feel, and obviously this is, you know, this is really open-ended, but do you have a feel for what, you know, what number would, you know, would really help, and you know, would basically, you know, kind of frost the cake and be spread out so that, you know, that things could be sustained, you know, through the at least through the calendar year?
What when you say a number, what do you mean? What do you mean by a number?
Are you going to present or ask for a, you know, and suggest that, you know, we probably need, you know, $2.5 million to, you know, go toward purses, you know, between, let's say, July and you know, whatever the period is that, you know, until there's a certainty as to how much, you know, how much revenue is going to come back and, you know, and when, you know, when those stipend monies begin to refill the purse accounts.
I think really, Steve, it's just a matter of, to answer your question, I don't have a number. There's no number that I can come up with today to that would be realistic. I think what the real question is going to be is just to see how we handle, to see when the slots come on and how they come back, and you know, and just having some of those negotiations with Astrana Group to see what their feelings and their thoughts are and to see what their contributions might be as well. So to be honest with you, I can't give you a number.
Separately, talk a little bit about the Horsemen. You know, I kept kind of expecting you guys to come online, and so we really haven't spoken to anybody in the region. I mean, I touched on things separately when Alan Foreman joined us, you know, when we were waiting for the redevelopment plan to become law. But for the rank and file Horsemen that you represent, Tim, how has everybody fared, and you know, how long can they hold on here? Were they able to get any help from the federal resources?
So obviously it's been very difficult for a lot of us, a lot of the owners, a lot of the trainers. Fortunately, through the federal government, I don't know the numbers, how many trainers here in Maryland realized that the benefits of the PPP loan. I certainly think some of them did. I don't know how many. I don't have the numbers. But that certainly was an anchor or a lifeline for a lot of us. You know, it's been difficult. It's been difficult not knowing when we're going to open, not knowing, you know, the time frame and the anticipation that it would be mid-May or by Memorial Weekend, and then having those dates come and pass. It makes it harder and harder for the Horsemen to keep hanging on, and then, you know, when we tell them, you know, we're hopeful that it's going to be the following weekend, and there are a lot of discussions that we have as well that, you know, we're not able to, a lot of it we have, a lot of the conversations we have are in confidence, and we have to be careful with how much we share, but at the same time, we need to share enough of that information to give our Horsemen the knowledge that we're working towards them, we're working towards a date, we're giving the government, the state government, all the information they need to make the decision. We're trying to make sure that they realize this isn't something personal. This isn't something perhaps political. You know, he's just, this is our governor. This is the way he's going to handle it. And you know, that's the reality of it. And yeah, it's been difficult. And not everybody has shared the same hope, I guess, that I think sometimes I have. Sometimes I have a tendency to look through rose-colored glasses. But, you know, I think that's what we have to do. We have to be hopeful. We have to realize we're not the only industry. It's not just the racing industry in the state or in the country that's suffering. Everybody is.
Sure.
The tourism industry. I mean, everybody is. And it's hard to realize that when it's our bottom dollar, when it's our payroll we have to try to make at the end of the week. It's hard to say, well, you know, everybody's in the same boat because it's, you know, you're focused kind of on yourself. But, you know, I guess in a long-winded answer, it's been tough on everybody. We're hoping we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, by next week.
Well, I should also include as part of the concerns from a breeding standpoint, from a Maryland bred program, which obviously has been, you know, on the upswing and has rebounded, you know, after, you know, dire conditions and concerns, you know, several years ago. Tim, any anecdotal, you know, you deal with a lot of home breeders and probably are as good to ask as anybody. Was there any, you know, any mares taken out of state over the last, you know, little while, and any concerns of those type over this period?
You know, I don't have the a real concrete answer on that. I would say, you know, I know Pennsylvania's had some struggles. I'm sure you've yep. seen the struggles with their governor and their breeding. I think, if anything, some of their mares have filtered back into Maryland. You know, Northview up in Pennsylvania is closing its doors. They're selling and focusing all their efforts here back in Maryland. Certainly, I think for us in Maryland, that our breeding industry, that's helped us. As far as for some of the breeders that I'm training, for which I'm training, you know, they sell a lot of their horses there. I know I've had some conversations with a few of them. They're having some anxiety perhaps about the fall sales, what they're going to look like when they go to sell their yearlings, you know, whether they'll keep them, whether they'll sell them at a loss. It's hard to tell. But, you know, for right now, I think we're holding sway and we're doing pretty well. And with the breeding industry, you know, I've got a couple of mares too. I'm an owner, I'm a trainer, and I'm a breeder as well. So, you know, I kind of see the all three sides of the industry. And, you know, certainly it's affected them. To what complete extent, I'm not positive. But it's certainly affected them somewhat.
Well, certainly the Maryland horseman with as good a representative as could be produced, Tim Keefe, who is president of the Maryland THA and in constant contact and, you know, working with, you know, everybody at the Stronach Group, the MJC, and basically will undoubtedly be ready to throw the switch and get going as soon as Annapolis says it's all right.
Yep, we will. We'll be ready to go. Anxious and ready.
Well, Tim, best of luck, and if there's anything I can, you know, pass along, and anything I can do to help, do not hesitate to ask. And I'm looking forward to talking to you about you know, the next A Too Fast to Catch. That's what we're looking for, and some other good ones.
Having me on today.
Not at all. Tim Keefe, everybody, and you can follow Tim on Twitter, TLK Racing, or visit, he's got the website too, timkeeferacing.com. And Tim, you know, it's hard, you know, when you talk to horsemen that are, you know, when we used to talk to Rick Violette, for instance, you got a business, you got your, you know, your 4:30 to your 4:30 a.m. to 9:30 at night business. You know, you got your stable, and you know, then when you end up, you know, the head of a horseman's group, you've got, you know, they're invariably unpaid positions, and it takes a lot of time. And Maryland horseman certainly with a terrific representative. And Tim Keefe. We'll stay right here, and we're going to go from Maryland out to Indiana, where there was a little bit of uncertainty, and you know, it wasn't firm, and then all of a sudden, everything fell into place, and you know, word came that Indiana would kick off their season June 15th, and we're delighted that we get a chance to talk to Eric Hallstrom, who is new to Indiana Grand, but has been a success everywhere he's gone. Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Really good to be with you.
Haven't talked to you in too long, and happy to, you know, have you. And you know, you stepped into a really I suppose a set of challenges you couldn't have imagined, but you know, talk a little bit about the way things unfolded and the decision making process and getting Indiana's season, you know, written into place.
Well, it has been challenging, you know, but I would qualify it by saying, let's also realize we're all healthy here. We've kept jobs. We've got some a lot of really great things going for us here in Indiana. So we could sit and worry about a lot of things that have happened or what we've had to tackle. And I'm kind of looking the other way and saying, let's make some lemonade out of some of these lemons. And we've got plenty of opportunities here. And even though we've lost about a quarter of our meet, you know, we were scheduled for 120 days. That's a long, long meet. And we're still going to end up being, you know, about 94 days. And once we get going, you know, we're still going to be a real long, consistent product for racing customers all over the country. And really all that's happened here is we've just kind of changed our focus. And we would be crazy to keep the schedule that we had, which was, you know, included some Saturday nights with a lot of on-track promotion and whatnot. It's just too, there's too much uncertainty there. So we've switched it up, and, you know, I almost deem the schedule to be a little bit fluid as we kind of go through the meet, but we might wake up a month into it and find out that Monday to Thursday afternoons are working. We might wake up and say, that's not where we should be at. And then, you know, I think as long as you're good partners with your horsemen, which I think we are, we definitely are, you can make changes, especially when you've got 94 days. We got plenty of time to correct and figure out what's next.
Talk a couple of nuts and bolts about the meet, because one of the things that you know, certainly has come out of these last 2 months, the reevaluation of the early part of the weekday calendar, and the idea of running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays as your spot on the calendar, that alone I think is sort of a response to what we've seen, you know, over the last couple of months with the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday success of Tampa and Fauner and Will Rogers.
Yeah, and, you know, I will, it's obvious we're not the only one who's been watching racing over the last couple of months. Everybody sees what's happened. But, you know, we're really, really close partners with our horsemen here. And, you know, when you get in the spot, we're really almost trying to salvage a meet. And we're not the only one. And, yeah, it's not just about the business at Indiana Grand, but we've got horsemen who are, you have their whole lives invested in Indiana breeding and racing, and, you know, we've got a responsibility there. And one of the main things we came out of this looking at was, how are we going to fuel purses, keep them at the levels they were in 2019, which is remarkable if you think about it at this point. Very few places are able to, when you lose a third of your business, to stay flat with last year. That's what we've got to. So I qualified again by saying we may find out in a month that Monday to Thursday isn't exactly it, and then we'll switch it up. If that's the case, we'll have plenty of time to react and make what's best for us and the horsemen. And, you know, in this crazy year, we'll probably put off a lot of our on-track promotions till 2021, which is, believe me, is disappointing. Our marketing folks, and we've worked really hard to try to come up with some really fun things for the track, but those, we'll just put that in the next year folder, and we'll bring them out when the time comes. But it's just really, really hard to predict that you'd have, you know, banner crowds coming out here in the summer. It's almost impossible to believe that.
No doubt. Talk a little bit about how you made your decisions, and of course, there is, the casino portion of the racing at Indiana Grand and Hoosier as well on the harness side. Talk about the purse structure and the decisions you made, some of the stakes and the open company, because Indiana, the Indiana bred side of things is a big part of your schedule. How did you make those decisions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that's you went right to where we started thinking. And you know, I'll say this: our casino has been closed since March 16th, and that clearly fuels much of our purses, and we need it. But it was flourishing before that happened, and you know, we added table games and sports betting near the end of 2019, and you know, I got here in February, Stephen. I walked into the casino, and it's the funnest place in the world. I mean, there you got this great race book and sports book. You got bars. You've got a bunch of young people playing table games. And all I could think of the whole time was, I can't wait to get these people out to the racetrack, because that's exactly who you can influence. It's very difficult to take somebody as a slot customer, bring them over to the track. They just don't care. And there's, believe me, we love our slot customers, so it's not a shot. But those that are interested in sports and those that are play blackjack and craps and stuff like that, you can get them over to the racetrack, and I couldn't wait to do that. However, now we've just got different set of issues. So we're focusing on that national simulcasting market. We'll see if Monday to Thursday pans out. And like I say, we're ready to change it up. If that's not where we need to be, then we'll do something else.
I want to talk about the Indiana Derby and Oaks and so forth, but bringing up the casino and bringing up the patron aspect, it gives me an opportunity to talk about your background, because when I said you walked into a challenge, it actually went beyond just the pandemic effect. You also take a position that had been filled since the inception of the building by one man in John Schuster, and John's just tragic death, which really shook everybody there and you know, industry wide. It's pretty, got to be a little difficult to just kind of walk in and you know, be somebody that is taking over for, I mean, really, a guy that just was an institution. I mean, that was on his way, it seemed, to, you know, having his whole career be there. You know, you've been at as interesting a series of racetracks, Eric, that have a little bit of you know, intrigue to each. You know, Canterbury and the outstanding success of the on-track you know, appeal of the place. We talked to Andrew Offerman a couple of weeks ago, and you know, they're going to be challenged by not allowing, you know, patrons for a certain portion of the year, at least. Fairgrounds and Louisiana Downs, you know, you understand the gaming aspect, and I'm just, you know, want to give you an opportunity to talk about your background and, you know, what your objectives are, and, you know, as, you know, we hope and expect things to get back toward, you know, a steady, you know, normal. I'm so tired of hearing the word normal, but, you know, talk a little bit about some of the long-term goals.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up John, because he was a friend of mine, Steve. You know, I worked with him as a Caesars employee for, you know, now a couple of years, and we did some cooperative marketing things with the Pick Four between the tracks, and you know, what cancer is no good, and we all know that, and people around here miss John, and I told everybody right from the start, I'm stepping in with one foot, not both, because I want to make sure everybody understands I'm not. If it wasn't for really horrible circumstance with John, I wouldn't be here. And, but you know, life goes on, and I've even made friends with his family and understand, you know, that times do go on. And so we're moving on. We've got a race that we've renamed in John's honor. It'll be on, Indiana Derby Day this year. We're renaming the paddock in his name. So those are minor things, and we all wish he was still here, but, that, you know, the program here and the casino is such a hidden gem. And, you know, I have seen some great things. The Fairgrounds is a magnificent place. I think, you know, you and I were down there for the Fairgrounds, for the Louisiana Derby Day in 2009 when Rachel won Fairgrounds Oaks. It was, you know, I saw some of the greatest racehorses in America. And, you know, here in Indiana, we've got a gold mine and a really, really fabulous facility with, you know, an opportunity to do things down the road that are even better. But in this year that we're at right now, we've had to refocus. And, you know, I never would have guessed as I was driving to Indiana that we'd be running the Indiana Derby on a Wednesday. You know, I think anybody would say, boy, something really went wrong, but something really did go wrong. So we're making, like, going back to this, it's almost like nobody's setting the ball up on a tee for you. They're throwing you a 98-mile-an-hour fastball at your knees, and you're going to have to correct your swing and still try to hit it out of the park. And that's what we're doing. And, you know, I'm really grateful to the folks at Churchill. They didn't ask to run the Derby on Labor Day weekend either. I mean, don't forget, this is a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us. But having our Indiana Derby and the Oaks as a qualifier to their big races is fantastic. And, you know, they didn't tell us what day we need to run these races. But, you know, I can look at the racing calendar and say, here's where they don't belong. We're not going to run them on the same day as the Haskell or the Travers might be or what like that. But we still understand what we are. And, you know, something in the middle of the week when we can have the best horsemen in the world and the best riders at our facility, that's what we're going to do. And I'll bet you anything we set a handle record this year. And that'll be, you know, we take out of the year as a positive. I'm feeling very good about that. So it won't be the same on-track experience. And, you know, there's people out there that are not too thrilled with the Wednesday Indiana Derby. And for this year, I just got to tell them, we're doing the best we can. Everybody's had to change some things up.
And actually, what is the date? Because I don't have it in front of me.
It's going to be July 8th, which is a Wednesday. So we'll have a big card. We've got six stakes planned for that day. One of, you know, two grade threes on that card, our Derby and our Oaks, both being, like I mentioned, qualifiers for Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Oaks, in our point system, and, you know, just with the general layout of the three-year-old map this year, still somewhat not completely dialed in, we just tried to find the right spot. Now, and the other piece of this is, in Indiana, we can't even have spectators until July 4th, and that's at the best. I would hesitate to say that it's 100% certain that we'll have people on track by July 4th, but if we're able to, we can at least have people here. You know, it would be quite a sight if we had to tell the governor of Indiana, hey, you're not essential, you can't come to the Indiana Derby. We're not going to do that. We're going to allow him the opportunity to come enjoy the day, and it's a Wednesday, and, you know, like I say, we got plenty of great folks. We got a great TV production. You know, Rachel and Nancy are top of the game as far as, you know, analysts, and, you know, Bill Downs is just a fabulous announcer. So we got plenty of good things that we can put a great show on still.
Well, one of the most important questions, and I know people are do want a confirmation, the Gus Grissom and the Florence Henderson, are they going to be on the stakes calendar?
The Grissom and the Henderson are on the calendar.
Nice. All right.
I'm guessing there's something there, because when I first got here, I had to say to Kevin Greeley, interesting names. Tell me the background on how we get a Gus Grissom and a Florence Henderson. And he came with the answer, and I just, you know, said, okay. You know what?
Of course. Well, it's, yeah, you know, uniquely, you know, it's Indiana, and the Mary Hillman George as well, and it you know, that's one of the appeals of state bred, you know, state bred programs, and you know, the regional is that it's about as Americana as it gets. And I guess another big question is, have you ever been to the 500?
You know, one of my first jobs as I started getting through my racing career was I was in Indiana back when Hoosier opened up in the mid-90s, and I worked at the off-track betting facilities. In fact, my oldest child, my daughter, was born in Fort Wayne, and one of those years I got the opportunity to go to the Indy 500, and, you know, in car racing, not necessarily my thing. I'd be upfront about that. I haven't gone to another race since, but just like anything, it's an amazing spectacle. And
yes,
it was the loudest place in America, and it was a bigger facility than I had ever thought you could even build. But so I have been there. I probably won't buy tickets, you know, when they come back up, but I can say it is definitely part of the Indiana culture, that's for sure.
Well, very much. And of course, Marie, I bring up the Marie Hillman George. She was the chairwoman of the Speedway for a long time and very prominent in Indianapolis and Indiana. It's one of the appeals there. And a Wednesday Indiana Derby is fine at Indiana Oaks. Undoubtedly will be, targeted by plenty of top outfits, the points. And what are the purse levels? How were they adjusted?
Yeah, we took they had to adjust the stake schedule a little bit to make sure that we didn't impact our overnights at all. So our overnights will come back right. Same levels as 2019. But there was very minor adjustments to the stakes calendar. Some of the stakes we eliminated was just because the meet has been condensed. They would have run prior to
sure.
Our opening. We did take a couple $100,000 off the Derby, but it'll still be $300,000 with the Oaks at $200,000 and very much a situation where we've got very, very respectable stakes calendar left for our 94-day meet.
It occurred to me to go to the condition book, and it is up, and it's all laid out there. The $200,000 Indiana Oaks, $300,000 Indiana Derby, and of course both graded. The rest of that calendar, the rest of that state card includes the Schuster, as you mentioned, renaming the Warrior Veterans for John. That's lovely. And the General Assembly as well. You got the two Hoosier Breeders sophomore stakes as well to start the card, at least in the book. So the stakes heavy card on Wednesday, July 8th. And Nice. When does everybody have to nominate? Let's get that out there so that horsemen know when nominations close. June 24th. Okay, so they got plenty of time.
Yep, we still got about a month before those close. And the way those 3-year-olds change, we'll definitely fill a gate that day. There's plenty of interest.
Have decisions been made as well, Eric, about the wagering menu? Any wrinkles? I mean, we got a couple of weeks to revisit that. Anything that you know of that horse players need to know?
Yeah. So, and thanks for asking, because Rachel and Bill would kill me if I hung up his phone and didn't talk about a little bit of it. But aside from some of the fun on track stuff, we really talked a lot about. How do we make Indiana Grand racing a consistent option for bettors, with especially those that are sensitive to certain takeout issues and whatnot? And so, one of the things we've done this year, we've always had a pick five that has a carryover provision, not a jackpot, but just a regular carryover. And this year, we in our brainstorming, we said let's make this the best, most attractive pick five in America. What are we going to do? So we're moving it to the last five races on our thoroughbred program, with the mixed meet. It'll always be the last five, but it's also going to be, and I'll use Rachel's term from that she sent me in a text last night, the world's, and she spelled it with like six R's, if that's kind of that Rachel hyperbole that starts to seep into things, but the world's lowest takeout for a pick five, and that may or may not be correct, because I'm kind of listening to Rachel whether that's true, but we're going to go with 11.99% pick five takeout, and that's a little hokey. I don't mind, you can laugh, whatever, but we're trying to find ways to pitch our meets and do different things. And the point is still, it'd be very, very fair for our wagering customers that our pick five will be, as low a takeout as you're going to get. And there's going to be plenty of things to offer. And I guess the best part that we can throw out there is that, we could have one of the better meets. And part of it just comes from maybe some unfortunate circumstances in the Midwest with other tracks, which is not anything any of us should or do root for, but we've got plenty of horses. you know, we got about 1,100 stalls here. We could have 2,000 stalls and fill them up this year. The interest is that high. And so I have a good feeling that we'll come out of the gate with full fields and our turf course not being used till middle of June. I mean, that thing looks like something you'd see in a golf magazine. It's just beautiful, man. Maybe that helps us use it a little bit later in the season. And, you know, we'll find opportunities and positives from all this stuff and make the best of the year. But that, I will, you know, encourage our wagering friends out there, take a look at that pick five that we'll have, and I'm sure we're going to come up with some sort of catchy slogan, because what else are we going to do with our stay-at-home orders right now? We have a lot of time to think. And right now, Rachel's world's big, you know, lowest takeout is in the lead, and I'm trying to beat her with something, but we'll see if I can come up with anything catchier than that.
No, that's a clever hook, and it is a little corny, but that's okay. Indiana is, after all, the fifth leading corn producer in among states, and got a ways to catch Iowa. But so it's not as corny as Iowa, but it's cute. 11.9% takeout pick five this year at Indiana Grand on the last five. And you know, you mentioned the mixed meat. You got what? You got a handful of quarter horse days mixed in.
Yeah, we do. So that 94, four of them will be strictly quarter horse days. And we're actually going to add, you know, we'll have the Monday through Thursday regular mixed calendar, but we're going to add four Saturdays select throughout the meet, basically one a month, where we'll hold quarter horse days. And they, you know, we got a really great program here. The purses on these are, that they're running for, even with the pandemic, are just fantastic. And so, if you are a quarter horse racing fan, you should keep an eye on what we've got going, because even during the Monday to Thursday, we'll have a race or two. But then on those days, you know, we got stakes running for, you know, 100 plus quite often. And, you know, nice. In this day and age, it's a good number. And we'll see how that works. I know our quarter horse leadership here is worried about having enough riders. And that tells you that's a good thing. Got enough horses then.
Well, and of course, on the quarter horse front, tomorrow Ruidoso gets started, and you know, you mentioned, Eric, that, you know, the other, you know, the demand for stalls, in addition to, you know, the regular lineup of barns that are, you know, coming back to Indiana, the situation in Chicago and in Altoona, Iowa, with Prairie Meadows and Arlington, that's where those extra horses are undoubtedly, you know, looking for a place to run. So, point well taken that Indiana should have robust field size. And again, like you said, we're not, you know, nobody happy about the situations there at Prairie Meadows and Arlington, but you know, it is making, as we're seeing already, you know, it's made for really good wagering opportunities in the venues that are up and going. So we're looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to checking in as the meet proceeds at Indiana Grand June 15th. So we got about 3 weeks, and Monday through Thursdays for the action, and that goes until November 18th and July 8th, the big date on the calendar, a Wednesday for the Indiana Derby and Indiana Grand, Indiana Oaks. We'll have plenty of fun leading into that, you know, that day. We'll give it a major focus.
Yes, and thanks, Steve. You know, and I'm sure I'm a fan. I listen all the time, and I appreciate what you do, and looking forward to a partnership this summer with you guys. We'll get somebody more interesting on as the meet goes on, when all the talent comes back. You're kind of stuck with me today.
No, I had wanted to congratulate you on the position, and Indiana Grand's future in really good hands. Eric Hallstrom, stay safe, and best to everybody out there as they get ready for a truncated but robust season this summer.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Eric Hallstrom, everybody, from Indiana Grand. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Got to get Dick Powell in, and we'll talk a little Hong Kong with Dick. And in fact, I was talking to one of our mutual friends yesterday of Dick's, and Jim Corns, who is not just a mutual friend of mine and Dick's, but a mutual friend of thousands, literally thousands, and not just around Saratoga, but from here to Dubai. Everybody knows Corns. And speaking of Fort Wayne, he's out in Fort Wayne. For those of you that didn't have kind of lost track of what Jim's up to, he's out in Fort Wayne, he and his wife. That's where she's from. Or at least that's where her parents are anyway. So they made a move to Fort Wayne. The home of WOWO, WOWO Radio, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Back after this, Dick Powell joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, Naira, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.com.